Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from not one, but two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when they have to update their iPhone and they don't know what all of these weird generated emojis are. Like, what is going on now? I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe have a laugh or two along the way.
But the first thing that we got to talk about here, because this is now our first show after Dub Dub, so there's a lot to unpack. Obviously, we talked about a lot of stuff during our keynote stream. I made a couple of videos, but it's been 6 days now since Dub Dub. We've both tried the betas in some form or another. Are you, you're not on the iOS 18 beta though, are you?
No, I am not.
So you only had that very brief experience with it.
Yeah, I don't have any of the betas right now. So I did play with it when I was at your place, but not since then.
Yeah. Oh, very good. You. Yes, thank you. Now, I was a bit violent, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, Noah, I think you probably made the right decision not to put the beta on your phone, because I have experienced, as we were discussing in the pre-show, the ice cube that is my battery is melting quite rapidly. I found myself on the Pro Max, mind you. I mean, I'm already down to 30%, and I charged up a little bit during the day. Like, this thing is absolutely gobbling my battery. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's the main reason why I don't install the betas. There's a secondary reason, but we can get to that. The main reason, yes, is because it kills the battery. I know there's a lot of like telemetry and logging and stuff that happens on the betas. And I feel like the battery life on my 15 Pro Max is solid, but it's nothing amazing. And if I installed the betas and it got worse, then I would be unhappy. So that's the main reason why I didn't go for it.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It really has made me realize what a precarious balance I was in. Because I think where I was with the Pro Max, I was confident that I could do a full day without feeling stressed about my battery. Unless it was like a big travel day, and then I would maybe go on low power mode. But usually, it was not an issue. It was what I would say is sufficient. I think the 15 Pro Max is where every smartphone should be. So I'm not saying it's good, right? Because it's the biggest phone, so it should be better. But it is the amount of battery that one might need. So going below that, now I kind of feel like this is what everyone with a 15 Pro is experiencing. And I'm like, dang, this is why Pro Max. Because you're new to the Pro Max. You are probably used to your battery towards, I mean, we're at 6 p.m. Pacific here. When you had an iPhone 14 Pro, how was your battery doing by this time of day?
I don't remember. Actually, I do remember that, especially towards the end of, I mean, I only had that phone for a year myself, and then I passed it down to my mom. But when I had it towards the end of that year, I would definitely have to charge it. It would probably be like somewhere around 20 to 30% of additional. Like, it would get down very low, and I'd charge it up to 20 or 30%, and then it would get down very low by the end of the night. So I do remember that. These days, I would say with the Pro Max, it's pretty solid. I do only charge it to 80%, so I think I need to be a little bit fair, because I only charge it to 80%. I do the battery saving thing.
Interesting. Now, I'll tell you what, Noah, this brings up an interesting question. You have been doing that the whole time, since launch?
Yeah.
Okay. So what are your battery cycles and what is your battery percentage? I'm very curious, because I have been charging to 100%. I am at 243 cycles. What about you?
I'm at 220 So we're very close.
Interesting, but I'm surprised that I have more cycles than you. And what is your maximum capacity right now?
It's worse than I remembered / expected. It's 97%.
Mm. So here's where I am very interested, because I am at 99, and I just hit 99. It was at 100 until maybe 2 weeks ago.
Hmm.
Now, my theory for this is that I charge with a MagSafe charger every night by my bedside table. I'm wirelessly charging it. And I think that you can feel comfortable in charging your battery to full as long as you're charging it overnight with a slow charger. I think that's the key. Because I think most people tend to plug in a fast charger and juice their phone up real quick. And I think that's why a lot of people have issues with the Pro iPhones degrading over time. Because when you end up, when you get down to, as you said, 6 or 7 p.m. and you're down at like 2% and you need to plug into your fast charger, juice it up to 30 or 40, and then you're down again, and then you juice it up overnight. That's a lot of fast charging. That's adding more cycles. It's kind of like this runaway problem, right? Where because your battery life is less, that also makes it degrade faster because you're putting more cycles on it. You're probably needing to charge it quickly because you're trying to use it, as opposed to, you know, typically on a normal day, if I'm not on FaceTime a lot, from 100%, I usually have 30 or 40 or even 50% battery by the time I go to bed. So when you put that on the slow charger, it's only doing 7.5 watts via MagSafe. Maybe it's 15. I can't remember which. But either way, not very fast. And at least most of the time, I think it's doing the battery health preservation thing where it will only charge to 80 and then it'll charge the rest in the morning. So when you combine those, I think that's what keeps batteries intact, and I don't think the 80% limit is necessary.
Well, it's interesting because I also charge my battery via a MagSafe charger.
So
overnight.
Interesting. So you have less cycles, but the same charging method, but less battery health.
Yeah, I guess the you know, it's a different, like, MagSafe charger, I guess. I don't know how much of a difference that would make, but yeah, I have 20 something fewer cycles than you and still, you know, says worse battery life.
Huh. That is weird. Maybe there's something about getting to like lower state of charge. Like, the whole point of the 80% is that it's harder to charge the battery that rest of the way, but maybe depleting it regularly below 20% has an effect too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely, you want to keep batteries between like 20 and 80%, so I would definitely imagine that, and I think especially if it's below 20 and you put it on the charger, it's going to like go as fast as possible to charge, like at least to get up to 20%. I don't know beyond that, but I definitely think that, and that's really interesting then, because it's like, you know, they're trying to stop it the one way, don't go above 80% because it's not great for the battery. But then if it has that effect of making you go below 20%, which is also bad, it's like, does that setting even really help you? It's kind of interesting. Mm.
That is, I forget that we started by talking about the iOS 18 beta, but this is an interesting conversation, and I don't want to reveal too much here, but Noah and I have talked about this concept before, so this is possibly something that we're going to explore in the future on my channel, so we'll see.
I think it's a very interesting question. And, like, this discussion, I think, is very interesting. I definitely think it's, you know, worth exploring. And we have a pretty cool idea of how to do that. So hopefully we can think about that.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll discuss. I think this is an interesting topic. But yes, you know what else is an interesting topic?
What's that?
Apple intelligence.
Oh, certainly.
I think the time has come. We got to get into it. We've had more details coming out lately. Unfortunately, no one's had a chance to try it yet, but I have heard from some people who have. They did say that it was, as much as iOS 18 beta will munch and gobble up your battery, imagine running an LLM on device while doing that. So you can imagine the battery life is not great. However, I think it's going to be really, really, really good, personally. I have high hopes.
Yeah, I mean, literally anything that Apple is going to do to Siri is going to be better than what they have right now because it's barely usable, I would say. I mean, I personally don't use it, like, literally ever, but, you know, some people do, and it works a little bit. But, yeah, anything they can do would be great. But, like, judging by, you know, the stuff that they showed in the keynote about how it has, you know, that semantic index of all of the stuff on your device and it can, like, really understand, you know, what you're doing and pull data from all these sources and you know, act and on your behalf and you know, do things for you, it seems really cool. So I'm excited to try it out.
Yeah. No, I think it's the thing that I think is most powerful about it is that it runs sort of in the background. I think we've talked about this before, Dub. We don't want chatbots. Chatbot, not it. And I talked about it in my video. I don't want AI to be the creative force. I want it to be sort of the bureaucracy paperwork force that's working in the background. And I think that a lot of what Apple showed is doing that direction, which is what I want. Like, I want to be able to just say, hey, what was that thing that Noah and I talked about regarding an event in October, right? So what's happening on October 18th? And I want it to be able to go back in time in my text messages, emails, whatever, and find that instead of me sitting there like, now what was I supposed to do about that? Because that's, I feel like that's much more useful. I don't want a weird, janky, silly little image. And even though Apple did do the image generation, I feel like they kind of, see it the way I see it, right? They implemented it as a playground. It's like, hey, make a stupid, dumb little image to send to your mom. Like, they didn't say, this is going to revolutionize the way that you make B2B contracting SaaS solutions. Like, no. It's a silly image.
That's actually a really good point. I didn't even think about that. But I agree. The way that Apple, first of all, the fact that Apple framed it is like, this is like a fun thing. Like, you're sending a text to a friend and you want to have, like, you know, a custom image to go with it. So I definitely agree with you there. And I think also the way that it works, it's less of like, you know, a prompt, like right out, like, I don't use those image generators, but I've seen people write, like, you know, they write the whole prompt and they're like, you know, whatever the thing is, they say 4K, you know, 16:9, whatever, like all these random like specifier things to like photorealistic, whatever. Like, it's like, it's almost like its own science or whatever, its own like thing of like how to craft the perfect prompt. And Apple did away with all of that. And they said, you know, you can pick one of these styles, you can pick a person, and you can write a little phrase of the thing that you want or like something that you want to be included. But they made it very simple. So it's not just like type in a prompt and you can and get whatever you want. It's sort of more that you're guiding it towards the right thing, or you're giving it some ideas and it gives you an image. So it's a different approach. And I agree, it's, you know, it's less powerful. You can't, maybe you can't generate any exact image that you want. But that's not the point. The point is to do fun, you know, little thing for, you know, send to a friend. And this is going to be more than enough. And it'll be easier for people to use, people that aren't techies and you know, AI experts or whatever. It'll be easy for them to use, which is, you know, what Apple's all about.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. That's the whole point. And I'm really happy that, I mean, they said in the keynote, right, we want to approach this from a very thoughtful perspective. And it seems like there's a good amount of guardrails on this technology to prevent it from getting, you know, a little out of hand. So I think that while obviously Apple was pretty late to this, let's be honest, I think they had good intentions and are executing on it in a thoughtful way. I am, however, a little bit nervous because, I mean, we're talking about running an on-device LLM with a semantic index that can go through all of your information. Now, I'm not concerned about that from a privacy perspective because Apple was pretty clear on how that's going to work. What I am concerned on is the battery life of running an entirely separate process on your phone, and also its ability to recognize things, right? Like, the keynote pointed out some use cases, like cross-referencing flight information. It pointed out, you know, hey, what was the location for that play that my daughter's recital is in or whatever, and like pulling meeting times from calendars. But when you think about it in like ways that it would relate to you, things that you might want to use, I think for me at least, it's going to be more like, what was that thing that someone told me 5 days ago, or maybe even a number of days ago? I don't know. Like, how intuitive is it going to be at figuring out what we're looking for? That's what I'm really curious about.
Yeah, that's a good question, because there were some things, so like the example that you mentioned, it was like whoever the presenter was at the time, it was whoever it was saying like, oh, it's my daughter's play. And they showed that there was like an attachment on an email, I think, that was a poster of this play. And the poster had the information, the date, time, location, whatever, on it. And I was extremely impressed with that. I'm like, wow, it managed to look at an attachment in an email that was like a poster and extract all that information and still keep the context that it was in, that it was from his daughter to him, like whatever, all of that. I was very impressed by that. If, you know, so assuming that actually works, it'll be very impressive. But, you mm-hmm. know, that sort of a question is how much detail is it going to get, and how well is it going to keep that detail in the context? So you can say things like 5 days ago or my daughter or whatever, and you know, it'll actually be able to pull that up. And then there's also the question, you know, the semantic index, right? It's basically, semantics is just meaning. So it's like taking these things, like that poster, and not just the fact that, oh, there was an attachment or like the metadata, the file name, whatever, but actually the meaning of that, that it's a poster for a play that's happening on this date at this location, whatever. So all of this information has to be stored, like cached somehow, because they're not going to, I don't think that they're necessarily going to do it on the fly. And so if there's this, like, you know, semantic index that is going to be continuously updating and storing the information, you know, how detailed will it be? How far back will it go? Is that going to take up storage space on your phone? There's, you know, some questions there too.
That's a good point. They didn't really detail how that's going to work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just hoping that they're not taking screenshots. That's all I can ask for.
Did you see that? I think it was Apple, right? Someone was interviewing some of the Apple execs, and they mentioned. Oh, it was at the Gruber show, the talk show. Did you see this clip that I'm thinking of?
I don't think so.
I think Gruber asked them about recall. The Microsoft recall feature is like, you know, do you see this as a problem that it like taints this AI stuff for everyone? Like, obviously they're not doing what recall is doing, but it's an AI feature that people have concerns with. Does that sort of taint the overall AI landscape? And I think the response was something like, you know, we're not going to complain if our competitors, you know, make a mistake. And, you know, the audience loved that and whatever. So it was kind of funny.
That is funny. I mean, it's an interesting point, though, because I feel like as much as there is sort of this broad excitement around AI, there's also a broad, like, ugh, to AI. Like, I've definitely seen one of the most interesting things for me as a tech creator is the difference in attitudes on platforms like YouTube as opposed to TikTok, or YouTube and Twitter as opposed to TikTok. And I think on YouTube, I'm seeing a lot of comments that are more along those lines. And I can, maybe I'll pull up the video and find some examples. But I think generally it seemed like people were on board slash maybe agreed with me about the silliness of the images. And let's see here. There was also somebody said that there's going to be a wait list for Apple Intelligence, which is interesting. I'd not heard about that. We might have to revisit that comment in a little bit. But
yeah,
they're talking about like, oh, this is great. AI, the tech bros lied, of course. AI isn't taking over the mundane tasks, but being used to replace creative people badly, plagiarizing them, lying to us, and scamming us. And then talking about how Apple Intelligence is a better approach, blah, 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 stuff like that. That's what I'm seeing on YouTube and on Twitter. But then over on TikTok, it's different. It's more like a, I am tired of AI. All I do is hear about AI, and I just don't want to do it anymore. Like, it, when people aren't as invested in the tech, that's when competitors making, I feel like AI has become kind of a tainted term for some people. Would you agree?
I think so, and I think a big part, I mean, AI is a extremely broad term, and
right, it
existed for a long, I took an artificial intelligence class in college, and it was completely different than what I had expected, because literally the main, like, we talked about, like, we learned, like, graph traversal algorithms, like breadth first search and depth first search, and how you can search through, like, decision trees to, like, make the best decision to a problem, and we talked about, like, word embeddings. We actually did a little predictive text thing where you could, like, input, like, a document, like a public domain story, and it would do an autocorrect, sort of like a tiny little LLM, but, you know, not nearly as advanced as that. But we did these, like, little things, but it was very, like, AI is such a broad term. It's been around for such a long time, and in the past few years it's exploded, but really it's such a broad term. And I feel like the problem is that things get lumped in, that there's, you know, the AI that sort of powers features like Siri, that it can, you know, understand your life context and give you information, and even simple things like autocorrect or like whatever, like those things where it's sort of in the background, and then the, like, very upfront, like the chat bots and the image generators and the video generators and the, you know, rewrite my script and whatever, like those things that are very much upfront. I think a lot of people have concerns with those, which I think are legitimate, and because they're AI, then the whole field of AI sort of gets lumped together with them. And I think we both agree that we are more interested in those AI things that sort of run behind the scenes and enhance existing features, rather than just like, here's a window that you can talk to an AI and, you know, hopefully it'll do something for you, but probably it'll just lie to you.
God, you gotta love it. You know, in a weird way, I respect it, right? It takes courage to unveil a model that can confidently tell you completely false information. I mean, isn't that just great? I love going to Google search and having the Google AI tell me to eat rocks.
Dude, it's funny. I tried to use ChatGPT earlier today. It's extremely rare that I ever bother with an AI, with a chatbot. But I was trying to search for something and I couldn't get any results. And I'm like, okay, maybe this is a good job for the chatbot. I can ask it the question and, you know, if it's looked at everything on the internet, maybe it can find some obscure thing that I couldn't find. And I ask it the question, and it just makes stuff up. And I'm like, I asked it like a question about like a band, and they're like, oh yeah, like, oh, they have this song. They don't have that song. That song doesn't exist. They just made up the name of that song, and they're like, oh, this song, you know, it's called this, and it has all of these themes in it, and it talks about these things in the song. And I'm like, this song does not exist, okay? There's no lyrics, there's no name, there's no song. And it's like, it's worse. Like, if I go on Google and I type this in and I don't get any good results, I'm like, okay, whatever, that's fine. That's better than me asking the question and it just straight up confidently lying to me. And then I tell it, no, you're wrong. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry, that's my bad. Like, what is that going to – you don't need to apologize. Yeah. What is an apology going to do for me? Like, you're just wasting my time.
Dude, yeah, that's so goofy. I feel like – and I mean, wait. They put that in the keynote too. If you remember when they talked at the very end about ChatGPT integration, they had – you could see a little text on the screen that said verify information, because literally Apple is aware that – I don't know. It might be right. Or it could have just browsed a 13-year-old Reddit thread and taken a joke literally, and now it's telling you to put glue on your pizza. Like, who knows what it could do? So, I mean, I think it was smart of Apple not to go down that rabbit hole, because, I mean, you look at any of the features that Apple themselves are implementing, and not a single one of them involves going to the web, synthesizing information that it pulls from who knows where, and telling you facts. There's zero of that in Apple Intelligence. And I imagine they probably explored it. Like, they, I'm sure, have been working on this for a long time. I'm sure that they were like, you know, let's be very careful about it. Let's try it. We need to make sure that it's accurate. And I'm sure at some point they just said, look, it's not, we can't trust this data. So we're not going to put our name behind it. We're going to get OpenAI to just let us use ChatGPT. And we're not even going to pay for it. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did hear about that. Pretty crazy.
That's like, dude, that's the kind of stuff that I get emails from brands that are like, hey, we want to sponsor you about this really great iPhone case. And I'm like, okay, here's my rate. And they're like, oh, well, we were going to pay you the, it's worth $20, so that's part of your payment, and we'll give you a commission. And I'm like, nope, nope, get out of here, not going to happen. That's not how I roll. I'm not going to become a salesman for you, okay? I'm not going to sit here and go, hey, buy this phone case so I can eat. You know, that's not how it works. It's an advertisement. I'm not a salesperson. But apparently OpenAI fell for Apple's marketing scam, because now they are not being paid for unlimited free queries through the new version of Siri.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, like, I mean, their logo shows up in the UI, so maybe it's like a marketing thing for them. Maybe it won't be free forever. Like, I don't know what the end goal is, but it is free. I mean, I guess you can already access free ChatGPT on the web. I think you need an OpenAI account, which won't be the case for Apple. You don't need an OpenAI account for that. But I mean, I guess OpenAI is getting something out of it. Maybe it's more users or more exposure or something. But it is pretty crazy that Apple's not paying anything for it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're right. Maybe they will be able to use it to increase their business licensing sales, or, you know, honestly just train the model. I guess so. But yeah, I don't know. It's a very very interesting scenario. Now, on the subject of that recent comment that I saw, and I was like, what is that about? So they referenced that apparently there's a wait list for Apple Intelligence, and I was like, what is that? Now, unfortunately, I have found an article that was discovered by a Mac Rumors contributor, Aaron Paris. Buried within the iOS 18 developer beta code are references to a waitlist and a limited preview for Apple Intelligence. This suggests that even users with compatible iPhones may need to sign up and wait for Apple's approval to experience the new AI features. Now that... that's a bit of a bummer, and you know, Lewis here with a very good point. Why would there need to be a wait list if it's on device? Why would there need to be a wait list if, let's be honest, it's only going to run on the iPhone 15 Pro and Pro Max? I guess by the time it launches, the iPhone 16 series will probably be out. So fair enough. But that seems, it seems a bit odd, no?
I have two thoughts. I think the first thing, I can understand from Apple's perspective, they're probably a little bit nervous about this AI stuff. You know, first of all, there's the question of how well will their guardrails work, excuse me, for like image generation, even the emoji generation, which we can talk about. You know, will people be able to generate images that Apple would prefer that they didn't? And then there's also the question of like, you know, the semantic index and the Siri, you know, asking it for this sort of deep personal information, like, will all of that work? So maybe Apple wants to gate it so that they can have the initial group come in and make sure that things are working right before they open up the floodgates. That's my first thought. The second thought is, could this waitlist thing happen before iOS 18 launches? Could this be sometime in the middle of the beta cycle that Apple starts to open up the Apple Intelligence stuff to, you know, people on the dev beta or even the public beta at that point? And that's where the waitlist comes in, and then maybe it launches without a waitlist, you know, in the fall to the general public. Could that be the approach?
That's an interesting idea. Yeah, that's possible. It's I hope that's the case, honestly, because that sounds a lot better. Like, I think the weird thing is, though, they said available to the public starting this fall. So do we think that that's actually going to come out with the full release of iOS 18, or is that going to come out later?
I think Apple might be, like, hedging their bets and basically saying, like, I think ideally they would want it to, especially with the iPhone 16. It would be kind of weird if you bought a new iPhone 16 and you didn't have Apple Intelligence on it, because I'm sure Apple is going to bring it up again, you know, when the iPhone 16 at that keynote, they're going to bring up Apple Intelligence and talk about how it's the smartest smartphone ever, like, whatever. They'll do some kind of thing with that. So it would be very weird if it launches without it. But, you know, maybe Apple will end up needing to push it back, and maybe it'll be an iOS 18.1. So it could go either way.
That's true. It'd be kind of a bummer if we have to wait until 18.1, though. I think I'll cry.
I agree.
Because I'm legitimately very excited for this. And I'll tell you what, I am equally, if not more, excited for the next step after this, right? Like, obviously getting it to be integrated is one thing. But the next step after that is I want it in Final Cut Pro, and I want it real bad, because that's exactly where it can take certain steps and just make them faster. And I think that is where AI starts to get really powerful. This first step is good. That, to me, is the next step. Obviously, with other applications, there's different tools that it could be used for, but that's one that I would be most excited for. You at least have the benefit of, like, they did announce Xcode. That's cool.
That's true. Yeah, I'm interested to check that out and see how that works. And, you know, they did, like, the text rewriting features. That's, like, a system-wide thing. So Apple is, you know, working on integrating. They have some of those initial integrations going. I think it's only a matter of time before it reaches, like, you know, Final Cut, Logic Pro, and, you know, some of the other apps that would benefit from it. I definitely agree that it would be a huge benefit if you could. I'm just imagining, like, if you could drop in a clip and tell it, like, okay, like, whenever I make a YouTube video, I'm horrible at it, and I'm so bad at, like, reading the script, and I have a million takes of everything. If I could tell it, take this long clip and chop it up and take the best piece of each take. Like, you know, I'll read one or two sentences at a time, and it might take me a few tries. But I could say, even if I could just say chop up all the times that I, like, start again, That's one thing. And if I say, you know, delete the ones where I mess up and pick the best ones. Like, if you could do things like that, that would be such a huge, like, speed up to, at least for me, at least a huge speed up to that workflow. That's the monotonous stuff that there's no benefit to you as a person to do. It's not a creative endeavor. It's just chopping up a clip and, you know, watching yourself mess up a bunch of times and whatever. Like, that would be, things like that would be huge for AI. And maybe I'd even try and make a YouTube video again if, you know, if I had that feature.
Are you teasing the return of the Noah Rubin YouTube channel?
I mean, I'm just saying, like, when I don't know how you make YouTube videos all the time. I think it's very impressive. I can't do it. But if I had a little AI companion to help me out, you know, short of a human editor or a human companion, then, you know, maybe that could convince me.
Well, to be fair, I don't write code and engineer software very often, so I feel like you have more of an understanding of what I do than I have of what you do.
Okay, maybe, but that just makes it more impressive, because I've made YouTube videos before and they've been like, I mean, you know, they're fine, I guess, but they're not near that quality level. And when I'm making them, I'm like, I kind of enjoy it, but I'm also kind of like, ugh, this is such a slog. Like, I'm so bad at, like, performing to the camera, and, like, then the editing's like a whole long whatever. So I'm very impressed by it. But if I had an AI companion to help me with, you know, all of these things, especially the editing, but maybe even some other parts of it, I think I would be a lot more motivated to do it.
That's fair. I think I would definitely agree with that. I mean, obviously I've gotten used to editing, I would say. I don't think it's my favorite part of the process. I think editing for YouTube is a very specific type of editing. And I wouldn't call myself a very good video editor, because I don't really know a ton about, like, effects and, you know, graphic design and stuff like that that a lot of people bring to the table. I think what I'm best at is flow and pacing and efficiency. Because for YouTube, you don't necessarily need the best edit in the world. You don't need to have, you know, a VFX shot. You just need to get your point across. So I think with stuff like that, this is where AI, I think, could maybe help me move up a level. Do you know what I mean? Because when it comes to a lot of video editing tasks, one perfect example of this with the way that AI can handle video and photo as well as text, I think if I were to be able to use AI for motion tracking and for, like, keyframing, that would help a lot. Because sometimes, I mean, the existing programs that are out there that you can plug into Final Cut Pro and track camera motion, a lot of the times it's really just a ton of manual work. Like in Blender, for example, this is something that a lot of people use for 3D VFX. And the problem is, a lot of VFX right now are just really, really manual. Rotoscoping, that's a tool that is used in every single VFX shot in movies. That is literally just like hand painting frame by frame. It's no different than the way that The Wizard of Oz was made in color. Like, they just had to hand paint it. Or maybe not The Wizard of Oz. There were early color films were just, they literally had a bunch of artists sit down and paint the frames. And so with VFX right now, a lot of it is like that. If I want to motion track some text, there's a very good chance that I'm just sitting there with, what I'll do is, like, get a post-it note and, like, put it on my screen on a point, and then manually frame by frame go and adjust that point to stay on that dot. There are some automatic or more automated ways of doing that. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. There's ways to do 3D tracking, but a lot of the times It's you go in Blender, you pick a couple of points, you let it track those points, you manually go through and refine it, you create a 3D scene out of it, you insert your models into that 3D scene, you color match and blend them and composite them, and that's just a lot of manual stuff. I think AI could make that happen like that. Maybe not perfectly, maybe not to the level that would be enough for a Hollywood blockbuster movie, but if it could get you started, if it could do that first 80% of the work for you in 10 seconds instead of 10 hours, that is going to change the game.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things like those kinds of things are like very manual intensive for a human. AI, you know, doesn't care. I think it's a lot of those things that are like very, I mean, yeah, just those things like, you know, cutting up clips and like, I guess syncing audio is easy enough. But if you're trying to like maybe time certain things, like time something to go to the music or time like a certain number of cuts or you're like, oh, my video is too long, you know, can I cut something out of whatever? Like just there's a lot of things that I feel like, you know, it's not the creative part, right? We're not saying we want AI to do the creative work for us. We don't need it to generate the videos or generate the music or whatever. Like, you know, we can do that. But like all of these manual things, I just want, like, if you could have an AI powered video editor, it could almost be like you're paying an editor. Like, you know, people pay editors to edit their videos. And obviously a human editor is probably gonna produce better work at the end, but if you have an AI, you know, doing it for you, it's going to be a lot quicker and obviously a lot cheaper as well. So things like that would be super cool, and I definitely think it'll come to Final Cut eventually.
Mm-hmm. And I also think that there's a way that that could be implemented without threatening a ton of jobs, because I think we kind of have both implied in a way that it's like reducing the amount of labor hours. I think it's a little bit different than that, because typically, I think what it does is it allows an individual to work more efficiently. Now, does that mean that you could maybe have fewer individuals? Possibly, temporarily. But as there have been multiple studies that have gone into this, because obviously technological advancements can and often do bring job losses. But you'll notice that if you go from like 1870, right, Industrial Revolution, all the way through today, it's not as if the unemployment rate just only goes up, right? I mean, think about it this way. Think how many coal miners there used to be in the 1870s and how many coal miners there are now. In the US, at least, Arby's employs more people than the coal mining industry, which is about 80,000. So clearly, a lot of jobs in coal used to exist and no longer exist. So you could look at that as a job loss. But, you know, there were probably millions of coal miners in the past, and there's not millions of unemployed people, because job losses like that tend to be temporary. And they can definitely screw people over. I'm not denying that. But that's kind of just the way that it goes. It's not really new, and it's kind of unavoidable. So I would say that really it's a good incentive to, you know, if you are, in this example, we're talking about a VFX artist, right? You can kind of say, okay, look, if I'm doing something that is easily automated, I should be aware that automation could come for me. Unless I'm able to harness that automation to do something that it can't do on its own. And that's, I think, where AI as a tool comes in. Because that's where it can say, hey, look, let's take this team of 10 people that we have, and now they can make a lot more high-quality things. That doesn't necessarily mean that we should fire them. And if they do fire them, that's maybe more of a commentary on corporate greed and the actual business as opposed to the skill itself. but I think that it's possible to have an advancement in technology without it being this catastrophic thing.
Yeah, I think what you're kind of getting at, it's sort of like a reallocation of labor, sort of. Like, all the people that were coal miners before, you know, I mean, I guess now, like, there's much fewer, but there was a time period, like a period of transition, and, you know, maybe some people, you know, lost their jobs and they got different jobs, and, you know, the next generation, fewer of them went into the field of coal mining in the first place, and they, you know, went to other places. So I think for the, you know, the AI stuff, maybe it will change the landscape. I mean, I know journalism is an area that is being pretty heavily impacted by AI as well. Maybe there will be fewer journalists, or, you know, maybe some of the larger institutions of journalism will become less important over time, maybe. But there will, you know, that labor can be reallocated. So sort of what you were getting at before, you're saying for you as a one-man team, you know, a feature, you know, these AI features could help you get to the next level. You're not spending your time doing all of the monotonous, boring work, so you can spend the time, you know, making your videos even cooler and, like, you know, larger scope and, you know, tighter editing and fancy effects, whatever, whatever. And then for the people, you know, you have a team of 10 people or more, you have a, you know, a team of editors and, you know, creative people, whatever. Yeah, you know, maybe you could fire some of them because you don't need all of that. You know, there's not as much work to do there. Or, you know, and or you can say, look, now we have this time freed up by AI doing a lot of the monotonous stuff. We can make even more videos, or we can expand the scope and make longer videos or more complicated videos. We can do things that we couldn't do before because we don't have to spend as much time on the boring stuff. We can spend more time on the interesting stuff. So I agree that yes, there could be some short-term, you know, job loss or other displacement or issues or things like that. But I think for a lot of the cases where, you know, it's not really trying to replace people. These applications, specific applications of AI, are not trying to replace people. They're trying to empower people to, like, you know, take away the busy work and, you know, let them focus on other things. And there are other parts of AI that I think are a little bit more, you know, targeting, you know, maybe trying to take away people's jobs, or maybe that's what it's going to do. But the stuff that we're talking about, I think it's much more of a positive.
And I think when you talk about the AI taking people's jobs, I look at that in a different way. I don't necessarily think that the AI, the technology itself, is taking the jobs away. I think it's lazy or greedy companies that are like, hey, we see this as a way to save money. And it doesn't go over well, because I don't know if you saw this thread on Twitter. All the Twitter tech people that I follow were just absolutely roasting this guy. It was some product manager or, like, startup CEO or whatever. And he was like, I can't believe how great these AI image generators are. It's great for advertising. I just fired, you know, 90% of my staff. I can do the same amount of work with 10% of the staff that I used to do. And it's just great. I'm saving so much money. And they got absolutely spit roasted in the replies, because people are like, no, it's worse. You clearly don't value your employees if you're just like, oh, heck yeah, a program that can do their work for worse, but it's cheaper. And I think that's, at the end of the day, you know, we should maybe not be fearing the technology as much as we should be fearing the people that wield it in ways like that, where all they see is dollar signs and ways to either enrich themselves by weird hustling scams or by firing all of their employees or whatever it might be. Like, I think that is the danger. It's not so much the AI itself, but it's what that AI brings out in middle management and executive leaders that think that they can get away with, you know, oh, let's just outsource it. You know, it used to be outsourcing work to other countries. Now it's outsourcing work to a machine. And people never really looked very highly on outsourcing in the past. I don't think that opinion is going to change. And I don't think, I mean, someone here says if the AI does the job better and cheaper than the human, AI should do it. The problem is I don't think AI can do something better and cheaper than a human, at least not right now, because it doesn't have the same, I mean, I don't know that you could ever replicate human consciousness. And so I don't think you could ever replace an entire human's idea with an AI generated one. It's always going to be transparent on some level.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to get too like philosophical. I don't want to go too far away from the core thing. I think part of this is, you know, the way that I guess capitalism works. It's like, you know, profit above all else. Like, you know, that companies are like legally, like public companies are legally obligated to do, you know, whatever maximizes shareholder value, whatever. And so if that becomes, you know, firing people, doing layoffs, whatever it is to, you know, because they're able to get the same or at least enough out of AI to replace people, like they're going to do it. And so I'm not saying that the people aren't to blame, but I think that there's also something, you know, like the context around this whole thing is also part of it. But, you know, I don't want to go too far off in that direction. But yeah, I think the main difference with the AI, it's just the AI that, you know, does the mundane tasks to empower people to do the interesting things and have more time and energy to do that versus the AI that is trying to do the interesting things for people and replace people. I think that's the difference. And so I agree with you that the AI that's trying to do the interesting part, the AI that's trying to generate music or generate pictures or videos or whatever, it's not there. We all know, you know, when we see an image, it's usually pretty obvious if it's AI generated and you see all the weird artifacts and the whatever, and you're like, ugh, you know, it just has that AI aesthetic and you don't like it and whatever. And so that stuff, I agree, it's not good. The stuff that really empowers people to do the more interesting part, that's the AI that's good. And maybe it will result in some job losses. You know, maybe you can do the same work with fewer people because those people are assisted by AI. And that's, you know, part of the tax of progress. And that happens whenever there are, you know, big progressions and whatever. But, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing in the overall perspective.
Right. Because I think, you know, like we said, temporary job losses can be made up in the future in other ways. You could also look at it from a different perspective. Sure, maybe you could do the same amount of work with less people, but could you not also do much more work with the same amount of people? So I think it is dependent on the approach that a company might take. One company might take something like an AI assistant in Final Cut Pro and say, oh, great, I can fire half my staff. Another company might say, oh, great, I can take on twice as much work. It's, you know, it depends on how the tool is used and how it is treated. But I certainly don't think that Apple Intelligence is going to be costing that many jobs. Well, except for the businesses that they put out of business. Because let's be honest, I don't really see how Grammarly recovers from this. Like,
yeah.
I mean, dude. Why would anyone need Grammarly now? And I feel bad. I've done ads for them and it's a great service, but that's kind of like the exact feature set that Apple just introduced. Same thing with not AI related, but AllTrails, right? Didn't they just last year have them as like the top app? And then now they basically just integrated that in iOS and killed their whole viability.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there's still some market for AllTrails for, like, you know, the people that are super into it. But for the casual people, why download another app and make another account when you can just use it built in? Like, definitely, yeah.
Interesting indeed. I don't know. It's just a very, it's a weird time. I feel like Apple's doing a lot of big things, but also a lot of uncertain things. I feel like we had a period of time there, maybe in like the late 2010s, where they were maybe playing it a bit too safe. But the past 3 years, we've had Apple, well, yeah, I guess it has been within 4 years of you know, 2020. We've had Apple Silicon, we've had Vision Pro, we've got AI. Big moves. It's kind of, it's refreshing to see, even if it's not always successful. Like, I think Vision Pro needs some work. We've talked about that ad nauseum, but it is at least good that I feel like maybe the world of tech is moving faster than it used to. They're taking more risks, trying newer things.
Yeah, I do feel like there was maybe a period of relative stagnation where, like, you know, it's like we look at the iPhones, right? It's like when the iPhones were first coming out, each one was a huge upgrade compared to the last, or a pretty big upgrade compared to the last. Or maybe not every, but every other, like the 4 to the 5 to the 6, you know, whatever, the 7's okay, and then the 10 was huge. So that was for a while, and then lately it's been, you know, a bit more stagnant. But there's been other areas, like you said, Vision Pro and Apple Silicon are two big ones, and now, you know, AI is the latest big one. There have been other areas that have really picked up steam that were sort of dormant before, and then, you know, who knows, maybe, you know, in a few years or in a while, something will happen in the phone market, or the concept of a phone will change. It'll go away and we'll have those glasses, or, you know, whatever it's going to be. But I agree that things are heating up. Things are getting a little bit more interesting lately than maybe they've been, you know, a few years ago. And it's cool.
It's pretty neat. Remember that Nature Walk? That's a classic.
Yeah, how neat is that?
You can tell that's an AI because of the way it is. That's how I am looking at... If anyone gets this reference, by the way, I'll be very impressed. That's incredibly niche. But, you know, you kind of can always tell the hallmark of an AI-generated image or text even. But all that being said, I think we're headed in a good direction, hopefully. I don't know. I'm going to choose to be hopeful on this occasion. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I think, like, I guess for these things, it's like, you know, is Vision Pro the future? Not in its current state. The current Vision Pro is not the future, but are they heading in that direction? The worst case that happens, you know, Apple doesn't nail it, hypothetically. Apple, you know, maybe they try the next, maybe it takes them a while to get to the next one. They don't nail it. It's still not great. And maybe some other company comes along and does it. Maybe it takes longer and they get it eventually, whatever. We don't have a lot of skin in the game here, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So it's fun to watch it and see, you know, what's going to happen. Maybe the AI stuff is a little bit more pressing, I don't know, but it's definitely not boring. I think that's the exciting thing, is it is not boring. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff for us to talk about. We love to have, you know, actual topics to talk about, so we don't have to make stuff up. And
yeah,
you know, it's good.
God, I remember, was it like, I think maybe summer of 2022 or something, there was a real big stretch of time where we had absolutely nothing to work with. We were just sitting here counting sheep. But I'll tell you what, you guys might have to count some sheep, because I'm looking at a calendar and I think we're gonna. What are you busy July 7th?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Yikes. We will see you guys. Oh no, Noah, this is maybe pretty bad.
Wait, you're not gonna. I think I know what you're about to say.
I think I might be here next week, but I'm not 100% on that. Are you busy next week?
I'm here next week.
Okay, so let's try for next week, because I don't think I'm going to be... Actually, wait, no, I'll be here on the 30th.
I won't be.
So if not next... Oh, you won't? Oh, no! Okay, so you're not here on the 30th and you're not here on the 7th?
Correct.
Okay, well, that's not ideal because I'm not here on the 14th or the 21st or the 28th or August 4th. So yeah. After that, I think it'll be the 11th.
Okay, so maybe we can try that idea at the beginning where we do a little makeup episode, because I think we're going to need to do that at some point.
As long as it's before July 12th.
Which is okay, maybe, we're going
to... We'll figure this out. But
we're going to discuss this after the episode.
Yeah, but you know what we are going to discuss right now?
What?
A segue to ending this wonderful episode of Dark Mode with your hosts, including me, Luke Miani.
And me, Noah Rubin. We'll see you hopefully next week, right? Maybe?
Hopefully. Hopefully.
And then we'll figure out...
Give it a firm 60-40.
Okay, and we'll see. We'll see when else this happens. Hopefully we'll see you again eventually.
That's a great note on which to end. Thank you guys so much for watching and listening and just putting up with us, honestly.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a good night. Have a good month.
Oh,
hopefully not. Hopefully it doesn't take that long.
Oh, no.